Welcome to this edition of Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson.
The tabernacle was a meeting place between God and men. It was a place where people would go to meet with God. And of course, Jesus Christ is the one mediator between God and men. He is the meeting point with God. If a person is going to meet God, if a person ever hopes to meet God, they cannot possibly meet God apart from Christ. He is the meeting point.
Today on Back to Basics, Pastor Brian continues his study in the Gospel of John. Join us as Pastor Brian begins his teaching on John chapter 1, verses 1, 14, and 16 through 18, in a message titled, "The Tabernacle of God is with Men." Now, here's Pastor Brian.
John chapter 1, I'm going to read you verses 1, and then verse 14, and then verses 16 through 18. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld his glory, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. And of his fullness we have all received, and grace for grace. For the law was given through Moses, but grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. No one has seen God at any time. The only begotten Son, who is in the bosom of the Father, he has declared him. We have seen thus far in our study of this first chapter of John's Gospel, we have seen that there are many allusions to the early chapters of Genesis. But interestingly, as we come to verse 14, we have now an allusion to events recorded in Exodus chapter 40. Let me read to you a couple verses from Exodus 40. It says, "Then the cloud covered the tabernacle of meeting, and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. And Moses was not able to enter the tabernacle of meeting because the cloud rested above it, and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle." Now you might be saying, okay, what does that have to do with what we just read? Well, this is it. We read in verse 14, "And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us." That word "dwelt" literally means to tabernacle among, or to pitch one's tent among. And so the Word became flesh and he set up his tabernacle among us, and then we beheld his glory. Notice there in the quotation from Exodus 40, it's talking about the tabernacle and what happened. The glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. And so here John is once again making a connection in his gospel with the early books of the Bible. And you know, to me, this is such a fascinating thing to see the correlation, to see how there's this relationship between the various books of the Bible. You know, there are 66 different books that make up what we call the Bible. And the amazing thing about these 66 books is that they're all connected to one another. They are harmonious in all that they have to say about God and his nature and about his work and those kinds of things. And here you see John just weaving this into his gospel. Now, interesting, most Bible commentators and scholars over the years haven't made too strong of a connection between John's gospel and John's Jewish heritage, or even the connection so much to the Old Testament. But the more you study the gospel of John, the more you realize John's Jewish heritage plays a major role in his presentation of Christ, and there is a serious link between this gospel and the Old Testament. And of course there would be, because the gospel is the fulfillment of the promises of the Old Testament. You know, many years ago, there was a famous rabbi who was the head of a rabbinical school, and he had many students under his care. And one day in his classroom, he noticed that there was a young student reading a small book, and he went over to see what it was, and he found, to his dismay and consternation, that this book was a copy of the New Testament. And in anger, he grabbed that little New Testament out of his student's hand, and he just hurled it across the room. Never thought twice about where it landed, never went to look for it, just left it at that, scolded the young man, and went back about his business. Many, many years later, this same man, he was troubled because of the rise of anti-Semitism in Europe, where he was living. And he began to wonder, why do they hate us? Why is there such a hostility? And of course, he lived in what seemed to him to be a Christian nation. And he didn't understand why there was so much animosity coming from what he perceived to be the Christian world. And so as he was contemplating these things, one day, as he was there in his classroom and as he was just sort of tidying up, he came across that little New Testament that he had thrown out so long ago. And he thought to himself, he thought, maybe if I read this, I would begin to understand why they hate us so much. And of course, in his mind, this was a forbidden book, because this was the basis upon which all of the anti-Semitic activity was taking place, so he thought. So he opened up that New Testament, and he read the very first words of the New Testament, the gospel of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham. And he was absolutely stunned. He thought, what? The son of David, the son of Abraham. David was Jewish. Abraham was Jewish. And he was so intrigued by that, he read the entire New Testament. And at the end of it, he became a Christian. He realized that the New Testament was the true Judaism, that the New Testament was the fulfillment of the Old Testament, and that what he had been involved in his entire life and had been an instructor in was not the real Judaism, but it was a false Judaism. You see, there is that organic link between the two covenants, and you really can't separate it at all. And we see that here with John in chapter 1, as we've mentioned, all of those allusions to Genesis that we've been considering, and now here, this interesting allusion to the tabernacle, Jesus tabernacling among us, the Word becoming flesh and living among us. Now, the tabernacle, as we go back into the Old Testament, this little tabernacle that was constructed by Moses was constructed as a dwelling place for God. And it was a picture. There was a prophetic element to it. It was a picture of what John is writing about here, the Word becoming flesh and dwelling among us. But when you look back on the tabernacle, there are several ways in which it typified Christ. And I want to point out just a couple of those to you tonight. As you look back at the tabernacle, you notice that the tabernacle was a temporal structure. It was a temporary building in which the presence of the Lord dwelt and the worship of God would occur. And so when Jesus tabernacled among men, his stay was a brief stay. He was here for just a little bit more than 30 years. Now, as you looked at that tabernacle that was constructed by Moses, outwardly it was quite humble, really, and in many ways fairly unattractive. It was made of different types of wood and things, but then it was covered by animal skins. And so I don't think it would have been the most impressive tent around. It might have been interesting, but I think it was fairly unattractive in many ways. But yet, this is also a picture of the Lord Jesus. The divine majesty of the Lord Jesus Christ was hidden under the veil of his flesh. And Isaiah said prophetically concerning him that he had no beauty or majesty to attract us to him, and nothing in his appearance that we should desire him. So Jesus, just from the physical standpoint, was just a very ordinary looking man. There was nothing striking about him necessarily. There was, you know, with his features and all, there was nothing majestic the way he looked. There was nothing that people would be drawn to him by his appearance, Isaiah said. The tabernacle was God's dwelling place. It was the place where the presence of the Lord resided. And we know from the writings of the Apostle Paul that it was in Jesus Christ, and it is in Jesus Christ, that all the fullness of God dwells bodily. So we see there a similarity. The tabernacle was a meeting place between God and men. It was actually called in the Old Testament the tent of meeting. It was the place where people would go to meet with God. And of course, Jesus Christ is the one mediator between God and men. He is the meeting point with God. If a person is going to meet God, if a person ever hopes to meet God, they cannot possibly meet God apart from Christ. He is the meeting point between God and men. And then finally, he is the place. Just as the tabernacle was, it was a place of gathering for worship. Jesus is the one that we gather around in our worship of God. And we're told in Hebrews, by him, by Jesus, let us continually offer the sacrifice of praise to God, that is the fruit of our lips, giving thanks to his name. And so as we look at these things, we see that there was indeed a prophetic element to that old tabernacle, and it was speaking of the time that John is writing to us about, when the Word would become flesh and dwell among us. And then he said, and we beheld his glory. Now you see, the one thing about the tabernacle was that the glory of God resided on it, and that, of course, is what made it what it was as far as its significance. And so with Jesus, although you might have looked at him physically and not been all that impressed by his stature, just physically speaking, there was, of course, the glory of God that would emanate forth from him. And that was seen through his miraculous deeds. And as Jesus would perform miracles, people would acknowledge God has visited his people. God is among us. They sensed his glory as he ministered in the power of God. And then, of course, the transfiguration. Here was a place where the veil was sort of pulled back, and the glory of God shone through the humanity of Christ. And you remember, there was Jesus on that Mount of Transfiguration. And his appearance was like light, and his clothing was white as snow. And Peter and James and John were there, and they knew that they were having this experience with God himself. And so here was a moment when the glory was seen. It was also seen slightly, but significantly and powerfully in the Garden of Gethsemane. You remember when they came to arrest Jesus in the garden, and they said, we're looking for Jesus of Nazareth. And Jesus said, I am. And we read that they all fell to the ground. And it was that demonstration of his power. It was that manifestation of his glory. And so the Word became flesh and tabernacled among us, and we beheld his glory, as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. full of grace and truth. Now, we read a little bit further down that the law was given through Moses, but grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. Now, John is not implying that truth did not come from Moses. He's not implying that the law wasn't true, but the law only revealed part of the truth. You see, what John's point is to show that Jesus brought God out into the clear. He brought God's plan out into the clear. There's no longer any ambiguity. Everything is very clear to us now. So that's what he means. The law came through Moses, but grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. You see, the law only told part of the truth. It only told of the inflexibility of God's requirements and the judgment that would come upon those that sinned. But you see, it didn't fully disclose that God would put himself under those very requirements, keep them perfectly, and then give his life as a sacrifice for those who sinned. That was all hidden in the law. That was hidden in the Old Testament, but it wasn't fully disclosed. So Jesus comes and he brings all of this out now into the open. You see, apart from the New Covenant and the revelation of the New Testament, the Old Testament is a riddle. It is an unsolvable riddle. You can't really figure it out. And thus, the Jewish people to this day are in that place of not really understanding God's plan, not really knowing what it is that God is doing or what was he doing in the past. We thought he was doing a certain thing, but evidently maybe he stopped doing it. And the whole thing about God and his covenant and all that, to the Jewish mind today, it's all a big mystery. Because you see, the missing piece of the puzzle is the New Testament. And because they've rejected the New Testament, they don't really understand what their own scriptures are saying. Jesus, he's the missing piece. And so grace and truth have been brought to us through Jesus Christ. Now, think about these two things. Grace and truth. Grace is man's greatest spiritual need. Our greatest need spiritually is for grace, because all have sinned. All have sinned. We have, all of us, already become disqualified for heaven. We're already disqualified. It's not a matter of, I might be getting close, I better watch out, I better turn in a new direction and try to do more good things than bad so it'll all work out in the end. No, it's too late. We're already, all of us, disqualified for heaven. We can never undo all the evil that we've done. It's an impossibility. So what does that mean? It means that any hope of saving myself or any hope of working my way into God's favor is out of the question. What does that tell me? It tells me I need grace. I need God's grace. What is grace? Grace is God's favor undeserved. That's what grace is. It's the favor of God poured upon a life of a person who does not deserve it. That's every person. Nobody deserves the blessing of God. Grace is quite often referred to as unmerited favor. Favor that you do not earn. Unmerited favor. But somebody said, and I think they're right, it's more than unmerited favor. It's favor against merit. Because it's not only that we haven't earned salvation, we have actually earned damnation. We've earned just the opposite. But God, through Jesus Christ, he has brought us grace. Man's greatest spiritual need is for grace. Man's greatest practical need is for truth. Think about that. You cannot live without truth. Now, lots of people are trying to live without truth. That's why life is so miserable for them. That's why life is so frustrating for them. That's why they are making everybody else's lives miserable. That's why the world is such a mess, and it's getting more messed up each and every day because people disregard the truth. They say, there is no truth. We just do whatever we want. Whatever feels good to me is what I do. Whatever feels good to you, you do that. Now, if people really start living like that, in the total sense, you have utter social pandemonium. You can't even have society. If people really, truly embrace relativism and take it to its extreme, it results in anarchy. You see, we need truth. We need to know the truth about God. We need to know the truth about ourselves. We need to know the truth about life and how it is to be lived. And of course, that's all the stuff that God has communicated to us through his word. And Jesus has brought to us this grace and this truth. And we read here in verse 16, and of his fullness we have all received, and grace for grace. Now remember, he was full of grace and truth. And now John says, and of his fullness we have all received grace for grace. So Jesus comes full of grace and truth. And John says, we who believe in him, we have received that grace. That grace that he's full of that fullness we have received. The picture is that of an endless supply of grace. Now, here's something that we have to understand about grace. We have to understand that grace is not just a word. It's not just a theological term. Grace is the power of God that is supplied to us through Jesus Christ abundantly so we can live to the glory of God. See, that's the beauty of the Christian life. The Christian life is not like any other religious system in the world. Every other system of religion basically has a moral code, an ethical code, a list of rules, commandments, things that you should do and not do and so forth. That's not Christianity. That's not the essence of it anyway. Although there are those elements to it, that's not the essence of it. The essence of the Christian life is that the power of God lives inside of me and flows from me and enables me to live the kind of life that God requires me to live. And there isn't another religion on the planet that has that as a part of its system. Every other system puts the person in the position of doing their best to try to attain to the standard that is set there. But the scriptures tell us in advance that all of our best efforts fall far short of what God requires. But that God has done something. He has come and he's brought us this endless supply of grace, and he infuses that grace into us, not a theoretical term, but an actual power. And that's what we're talking about here.
For the month of June, Back to Basics Radio is offering a book titled A Story of Grace by Phil Metzger. The book follows the work of God's grace across Eastern Europe, from the fall of communism to the present day. It's the story of hope in the midst of hardship, a story of mercy in the darkest hour, but most of all, it's a story of God's amazing grace. The book titled A Story of Grace by Phil Metzger is our gift to say thank you for your donation to Back to Basics. We encourage you to call us right now at 1-800-733-6443. Or visit us online at backtobasicsradio.com to order this book titled A Story of Grace by Phil Metzger. And when you give a gift to Back to Basics, we'll send you the book titled A Story of Grace by Phil Metzger as our way to say thank you. We really do appreciate your generous support of this ministry. We'd also like to remind you that all of our other resources are waiting for you at backtobasicsradio.com or by calling our request line at 1-800-733-6443. That's 1-800-733-6443. Our desire is to encourage you in your daily walk with God. We'll continue next time with more valuable insights from Pastor Brian as we study together in the Gospel of John. Back to Basics is the preaching and teaching ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.